It's a bumper week in PC gaming.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 157, for November 20th, 2008. On today's episode, Half-Life 1 can be had for a song, Left 4 Dead and Lich King sweep the nation, PC gaming is worth more than you think, Mirror's Edge on the PC is going to have a little bit of extra physics magic, and Sins of the Solar Empire 1.1 finally comes out, but Entrenchment is a ways off yet. All that and a little bit more on today's PC Gamer Podcast. All right, so I'm Dan Stapleton, and with me today are our previews editor, Evan Lotti.
Hello there.
Our former editor-in-chief, Gary Whitta.
Hello.
Our loyal intern, Josh Augustine.
Everybody turn off your flashlights.
Here's a witch. And our producer, Andy Bauman.
What's up?
Yeah, so actually quite a bit is up in terms of PC gaming today. For example, you can if you go onto Steam right now, you can get Half-Life 1 for $1, 98 cents to be precise. They're celebrating the 10th anniversary of the release of Half-Life 1, which PC Gamer has thrice declared the best game of all time in our top games of all time lists. It's still definitely worth playing today. So we highly recommend that you go out and grab that one if you missed it or if you misplaced your copy or. Yeah, it's $1. Come on.
If you have some loose
change
in your pocket.
That's right, isn't it? You got to wonder, though, who's left to buy it at this point, even for $1.
I mean, there are a bunch of people out there probably who just never got around to it or were too young. I mean, it's a 10-year-old game now. So
is the version they're offering for $1, is it Half-Life Source?
I don't think so. I think it's just
I don't think I'd want to play the old original one. The graphics would not hold up, but the kind of the remastered version they did on the newer Half-Life 2 engine looks pretty good. It would still be playable now.
Even that one doesn't look so hot. I mean, it's using all the old textures and everything. They pretty much just ported it over to the new engine. So it looks pretty much the same. It's a little bit shinier maybe, and the physics are better. But
sometimes it's shocking though. You don't remember. I think your mind kind of compensates for how bad some of these games that are 10 years or old. 10 years or older look. Like I saw some screenshots the other day of Duke Nukem 3D that I hadn't seen in ages. I was like, holy crap, games looked really bad back in the day.
Right. Well, Half-Life was a Quake 1 engine game. It's not going to wow you, but at the time it looked great. And it still doesn't look terrible. I mean, you can look up screenshots right now, and it still looks, half decent.
And as a game, it still holds up. I mean, I would still put it on my list of the all-time best PC games easily.
Right, and if you've got like a little netbook or something that some old computer that can't run newfangled games, it's great. But guys, were you on staff when Half-Life came out?
Yeah, I think so. 98, because I put. You know what's so funny? As I remember back in the day when Sierra would call us up and say, Will you put this new game on the cover? It's called Half-Life. And we were like, well, we don't know who it is. We don't know who these people Valve are. We kind of need a game that's got a bit more buzz around it to put on the front cover. And, because if you remember, if you're old enough to remember what was going on back then in like 98, there wasn't any pre-release buzz. There weren't a lot of previews. There wasn't a lot of hype. What happened was they released this OEM version that came out that was, I guess, was going to be bundled with, some computers at the time. And it came out kind of as a demo, and everybody was just blown away by it. And then that was the moment. And just in that one morning, I remember that we played the game in the space of like an hour. Half-Life went from this obscure thing that nobody had heard of to like the hottest game that everybody was interested in. It was pretty amazing.
That doesn't happen very often anymore.
No.
No. Do you remember those ads that they would run in Gamer where it was like, run, shoot, run, shoot, run, run, shoot, shoot. And then you would like open it up, and it was like Half-Life, like, going to break the monotony or something, and you're like, what are they talking about? Like, they think they're going to come in, and you like had no idea what they're talking about. I thought that was like
we had never seen anything like it, because we had never seen a game at the time that had such a cinematic presentation, where again it's changed everything since then. But you got to go back to 98 and remember when we first saw that intro where, you know, you were kind of on the train going to work, and it was just like another day at the office. We were like, what the hell is this? We had never seen a game that had started like that. And it went all, it took you all the way up to, you know, the kind of the reactor explosion where it opened up the rift and the bad guys started to come through. And then that was the end of the demo. We were like, holy crap, this is unbelievable. You know, we had just never seen anything like it back then.
And nothing had really done scripted events, at least not that well. Like when they had people getting dragged into vents and you could...
Yeah, like when you go back to get the elevator and the elevator kind of like hurtles past you with people in it screaming. Like that kind of script, the whole idea of events that kind of trigger right as you get to them so that you see everything kind of happening right at the most cinematic moment was totally new back then, certainly in a first-person perspective. That was the other cool thing. I love the fact that it never broke the first-person perspective. You never had a scene where, like, you sort of saw, like, a third-person Gordon Freeman going into an office and having, like, a little scripted scene. It was all done through the player engine, and I think that was a big part of what made it help feel so immersive.
It's also amazing to me how connected people are to the character of Gordon Freeman, considering you never see him in the games, he never speaks, but people know who he is still. I mean,
I think part of that was they just liked the idea. I mean, you know, you obviously see what he looks like through the character art, and I think people liked the idea that he just looked like a regular dude. You know, he was like a scientist at a laboratory who had been thrown into this crazy thing. He wasn't one of these stereotypical bald-headed space marines. He was kind of a geek action hero, and I think people responded to that.
But you know, it's a little bit it's got to be more than that though, because I was playing Dead Space, and you know, you're playing as an engineer guy who for some reason is also a, you know, commando kind of person who blows away a bunch of aliens. But they did the same thing in there where he doesn't speak. And people are just speaking to him, and it just feels so odd that he's not speaking back because of the way it's written and the way they set things up. It's like, oh, you've got this love interest it's like Gordon Freeman was just like an everyman. He didn't have a story. He didn't have like a backstory. He didn't have other characters but he didn't have like a whole lot of personal relationships that had any depth. It's like, oh, hi, Gordon. You know, so
yeah, I think there's kind of a psychological reasoning behind it. I think it's deliberate the way they did it based on some different theories about the way that players feel connected and related to characters. You know, Stan Lee always used to talk about the whole reason why he did the Spider-Man character the way it was is that with the character's face hidden behind a mask, any kid who was reading the comic could imagine that it was his face behind the mask because you didn't know what he looked like. And I think that because you never see Gordon and because he never speaks, he's never established as someone separate from you. And because he doesn't have his own voice, which isn't yours, or his own look, which isn't yours, it's easier for you to imagine that you are him as you're playing the game.
With RPGs now, like people, when Fallout 3 came out and people had never played, you know, Fallout 1 and they had just played Mass Effect, they're like, why doesn't my character talk? You know, it would be much more interesting if my character talked. And I tend to disagree with that myself. I think it does, you know, take away from the role-playing experience a little bit when somebody else is saying the lines that, you know, you're kind of internally imagining how you would say it and somebody else is saying it. It's like, it's more cinematic, yes.
Mass Effect does at least give you the choice of deciding what your character will say, though, which right. kind of helps.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, it's giving your character a voice that isn't yours.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the bottom line is go out and try out Half-Life. I kind of disagree with you guys that the graphics, you know, the aged graphics will really impact the experience, because I think that that, you know, really really great games you can go back and play. I mean, I go back and play XCOM all the time, and that's far worse graphics than Half-Life. And yes, that is nostalgia a bit, but I think that anybody can appreciate just how good this game was.
For me, when I went back and played, it's always the fact that it only has like a handful of character models as the scientists and the security officers and whatnot, and they're all identical, and there's no individuality really to those characters. It's kind of funny, actually, hearing them all have the same voice and everything.
That's true of games, even, you know.
It's like Oblivion.
I know. Oblivion, especially on the console, had that problem. That was a little bit better on the PC because they had more memory to work with, so they were able to put some more heads and stuff in. But the voice work was still highly repetitive. But in other Valve news, Left 4 Dead has finally come out and swept the nation. We've been playing like crazy. I've been playing with Evan and from MaxBC we've got Will Smith and Norm are playing every night, and Jeremy Williams is playing every night. So we've had a pretty good team going. And I was also playing last night with Bill Harms, one of our former editors. And Gaz, you've been playing, right?
Well, I played the demo and enjoyed it a lot, and have been anxiously awaiting the full game, and I preloaded it. I was ready to play the minute it came out, but I'm slightly ashamed to say I haven't yet played the full game with any of you guys, for reasons which I'm sure we'll be getting into very shortly on this very same podcast.
How about you, Andy? Have you been playing?
No, I have not, because all of my desires of gaming have just gotten sucked into Fallout 3 for the moment. So that's all I've been concentrating on, is just getting through Fallout 3.
I'm telling you, this is a real problem this year. I think it's more keenly felt this year, this holiday season, than a lot. You know, you always get a lot of the good games come out of the holidays. I get that, but this year it just feels particularly bad. There are so many games, all kind of, it's like a dog pile. And there aren't enough hours, even if you've got the money to buy all these games, there aren't enough hours in the day. And I think it's a real shame, because there's a lot of really, really good games right now that are probably going to get overlooked because there's just too much competition right now.
That's very true.
Yeah, I'm feeling it a lot harder this season than I did last season. And I don't know why. Maybe it's just because work has picked up more for me and I'm more busy. But yeah, like last season I was like, yeah, I could do this. And this season I'm like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed too much.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's see what came out around this time last year. Does anyone remember specifically?
It's BioShock and the Orange Box.
Mass Effect.
BioShock and Orange Box were the must plays, but Mass Effect didn't come out for PC until a little bit later. I guess there just wasn't a whole lot last year compared to this year. I mean, there was Call of Duty 4, which is great. There was The Witcher, which actually I still haven't gotten around to playing. And Crysis had come out a little bit earlier. Than
Unreal Tournament 3, yeah, Universe
right,
of War.
Nobody played, so.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. But yeah, so I guess this year is just substantially, and then there was the Orange Box, which was also...
Which we're still playing a year later, almost.
Orange Box was also a little bit earlier, but I guess there just wasn't as many like major games that at least I wanted to play.
Yeah, and this year, a lot of the games have so many hours. Like Fallout 3, you could put a ton of hours. Far Cry 2, it's all open. Left 4 Dead is you can play infinitely. It's not just like, okay, dedicate 30 hours and you're done with this game and you can move on to the next one.
Yeah, I haven't even touched Fallout 3 yet. There are a few games that you can burn through really quickly. Like Mirror's Edge is not a particularly long game to play, and there's no multiplayer. So once you're done with it, you're done with it. Gears of War 2 has some pretty good multi. I know I'm kind of on some like non-PC stuff here, but the point being that I think the smart thing is to get kind of burn through the short games first and save the longer experiences for last. Like my plan right now is I haven't currently even started on Fallout 3. I think I'm going to wait until I've played through everything else. I probably might not even get to it until after the holidays, but that's fine because then you kind of go into the lean gaming months, and these games are kind of like, you know, you can kind of be like a gaming squirrel, storing up your gaming nuts for the lean, harsh winter ahead. There's no law that says you have to play every new game the minute it comes out, because you just can't spread yourself that thinly.
And there's no shame in that.
Yeah, I'm going to play. Generally, actually, the games that have good multiplayer components, like Left 4 Dead, are the ones that you kind of want to jump into right away, because you want to be there when the player base is really strong. I mean, not that it's gonna dwindle in that case. I mean, Team Fortress 2 and other games are still going really, really strong, but it's fun to be playing, you know, the new online game when it's the hot new game that everyone's playing together. The single player games, you know, you can kind of wait and play those anytime. So I'm trying to parcel out my time very carefully, and I'll get to Fallout 3 and some of the more ponderous, the longer experiences. I'm happy to play those probably into the new year when, you know, there isn't a lot of stuff out there to play, and you'll be glad that you didn't play that yet, because it'll be there to tide you over.
The deal that they're offering on Left 4 Dead now, if you do have a group of friends that you want to play with, is that you can get four copies for the price of three. So if you pool your money, you can get four copies for $150.
That's a good idea.
It's a very good idea. I mean, yeah,
especially since it's aimed at groups of four players. That's a really good promotion.
Yeah. I gotta say, just cheers to them for rolling out all these deals at the same time. I mean, it's a good effort, you know.
Yeah. So you might want to take.
Does that only apply if you buy it on Steam, or can you get the retail versions that way as well?
I know it applies on Steam
package. Yeah.
Pretty sure it's Steam.
Right.
Well, yeah, Gary, you brought up a great point about, like, you wanting to jump in with the multiplayer game so you're, like, fresh with all the players. And that's my question. Do you think I should get into Left 4 Dead now or so I won't be, like, lost and kind of, like, behind on the curve?
Not necessarily so much with Left 4 Dead. Well, maybe a little bit because of the versus mode. The other reason why you should jump in, you should always jump in right away with a multiplayer game if you want to be competitive.
Yeah.
Is you don't want to wait 3 months when everyone's kind of leveled up and got a bunch of skills and you've got no idea how to compete with players who are much more experienced than you. If you're going to play, you know, just cooperatively in Left 4 Dead, then it's probably not so bad. But I would imagine that it still behooves you somewhat to kind of get in there so that you're not like the weak link in the chain. You know, you've got to make sure that you're keeping up with everyone else if other players are relying on you.
And in this case, it's not, you know, literal leveling up. It's you know, learning the skills and learning the maps and, you know, learning all the good places to pounce if you're a hunter and that kind of thing. There are no unlockables in Left 4 Dead yet. They may add some later.
I've got to say, like, the environment for Left 4 Dead is so rich right now that I would encourage anybody to jump into it now, honestly. I've never seen, I mean, even through Team Fortress 2, which isn't like a very cooperative game in a competitive context, I've never had a more social shooter with my Steam friends and with my, you know, my acquaintances here at work, and just getting to know people and meeting up every night and then having like water cooler kind of discussions about what happened last night, the next day. And it's just such a ripe and satisfying environment for the game right now. It's really great.
I think it's also a good idea to get in now because like everybody you know is playing, and it's a better game when you're playing with people that you know.
But Fallout 3 is so good.
I'm not arguing with you.
there's nothing even in this age of multiplayer, and I think that we're seeing some really great trends in multiplayer right now with this. Cooperative trend I think is great, and I think it's going to continue. I'm glad to see that, and I love playing online, but there is something to be said for a really rich scripted single player epic experience. So, you know, there's even though everyone's kind of playing Left 4 Dead and Lich King right now, there is a you know, there's a reason why that Fallout 3 hasn't suffered at all. People still want that kind of experience,
right? And but that moves us on to Lich King there, which is now the fastest selling PC game in history. They moved 2.8 million units in 24 hours, which has never been done before. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, in fact, it may end up even be the fastest selling game on any format this year. Probably beat, you know, a lot of the top Xbox titles that are kind of burning up the sales charts right now as well.
Really,
Yeah, sorry. It's surprising. Just we got the numbers for Little Big Planet, which is, you know, Sony's big game, supposed to sort of drive their sales through the holidays, and it only sold about 214,000 over 4 days.
Yeah, well, Little Big Planet's been kind of needs time to kind of catch on. But I mean, look at a traditional blockbuster like Gears of War 2, which I think they were making a lot of noise about the fact that it sold, you know, in excess of 2 million units.
Right.
In its first week. I mean, obviously, Lich King will have done a lot more and a lot faster than that.
Right.
Yeah, it should be noted that Lich King wasn't released or won't be released in Asia for a few months. So, I mean, this is only American and European markets.
Oh, snap.
Wow.
Yeah, but so I guess in Asia, it's kind of a different model. I mean, do a lot of people actually buy it in Asia? Or
There's no box. It's all downloaded.
Right.
It's all subscription.
But even so, I mean, like, do the gamers themselves buy it, or do the PC bongs buy it, like the gaming clubs? I'm not sure how much like individuals actually buy it over there.
Well, they'd have to upgrade their account, so I imagine they'd have to buy it personally each.
Right. That's a good point. I don't know exactly how that works though.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know.
Grand Theft Auto 4, by the way, on the console sold more than 6 million copies in its first week. So that's going to be hard to beat, I think. But if anything on the PC can do it, it's WoW. And
yep.
the fact that it's $30, right? Or is it 40?
I think it's 40, but you know, it's an expansion. It's not a standalone title. Which is pretty amazing. I mean, if before the launch of Warcraft, you know, you've got to go back a few years, but if somebody said to you, the biggest selling PC game of all time, or the fastest selling, will be an expansion pack, you'd have a hard time believing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because you've got to sell like the thing that it's expanding on first.
Yeah, you're theoretically diminishing.
And you've got to sell the thing, and you've got to sell the previous expansion. If you want to play the Lich King, you've got to have Warcraft and Burning Crusade already. So they may even have seen a little blip in sales of Burning Crusade as well. For players who, for whatever reason, may have skipped out on Burning Crusade, but now they're excited about Lich King because they want to create a Death Knight or whatever. They like the look of that content, or you know, more of their friends are getting back in this time. You've got to go buy Burning Crusade and Lich King. You can't just jump straight through it.
How many of those guys could there really be, though, that would have spent enough time with their character at level 60 when they're a bunch of, you know, 70s running around, that they would want to buy Lich King?
Someone that gets laid off.
The Death Knight thing is fairly compelling. There's a very, very popular thing right now, the Death Knight. Everyone's rolling one. So
yeah. The Death Knight is awesome.
For that. Yeah.
Guys,
you only need
one?
A 55 character.
Do you have a Death Knight, guys?
I do have a Death Knight. I have a level 58 Death Knight currently. I'm kind of splitting my time 50-50 between leveling my main character, who's currently a level 71 mage, hopefully soon to be level 72, and my Death Knight. Death Knights are a lot of fun, but there seems to be some... they're a very controversial class right now. A lot of people seem to think they're overpowered. If you are a Death Knight, you think Death Knights are great. If you are not a Death Knight and you meet one, you probably don't like them quite so much. but they're a great leveling class because, I mean, it's just insane. I mean, you can just burn through content with a Death Knight. They're very, very powerful. It's kind of like if you gave a rogue magic spells on top of everything else they already have. It's a little bit scary, and Blizzard may need to do some tweaking because I was kind of running around Eastern Plaguelands and fighting mobs that I seem to remember giving me a hard time, and I was just absolutely slaughtering them as a Death Knight. And I don't even know how to play the character yet. I'm just kind of like spamming the buttons because I don't really understand the rune system. But they are very, very powerful. And if you go to Outland and go to some of the early 60 zones in Outland where, you know, Death Knights would have to go to level, it's like Death Knight. It's like a Death Knight theme park. They're just everywhere. And I think you're going to see a lot of Death Knights as we go forward.
Yeah, I actually want to get the response for you guys that are playing it. I know there's sort of some feedback from the community. Apparently this sort of mega clan or mega guild had already cleared all the content in the game, all the instances and raids. I think it was last week. And I know Andy,
it was
last
Sunday, I think.
Yeah, Andy isn't on the podcast today, but he got level 80 last night. And does it seem like the content is either too easy, or is there an exploit or something? Is there something wrong? Is there too little content? Am I missing something?
No. I mean, no? These are just people that spent a ton of time and basically took a week off work and just devoted. Because, I mean, if you just sit down and play, you can probably level in, like, what? The first guy was done in, like, a day's played time or whatever.
But he had backup, yeah.
So. Yeah. But I'm sure these big guilds who are so serious about it, I'm sure they had people helping them out, too.
And also, when you ask, you know, is there not enough content, we're talking about a $40 game here. Did these people get $40 worth of entertainment out of it? Absolutely they did. I mean, how many hours? I mean, if you spend 24 hours on something for $40, that's a pretty good deal right there, and most people are getting a lot more than 24 hours out of it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I have no idea if it's comparable to Burning Crusade or other editions.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, and when Burning Crusade came out, people blew through it right away. They just, you know, you don't read the quest text. You avoid everything that's not, you know, the most efficient. I mean, and they're not really done with the game content-wise because, I mean, for the next 1 year or 2 year, they'll be releasing more raids and dungeons, you know, that they don't have to pay for.
I have to admit, I think we probably talked about this the last time when, you know, Burning Crusade came out and someone hit 70 really, really quickly. You know, there was the guy that hit 80 within like 72 hours or something. And it just irritates me a little bit. I think it would irritate me even more if I worked for Blizzard. I really don't think it's anything to be congratulated. I almost think it's a little bit sad. You know, Blizzard go to all this effort to create this amazing content and these really cool scripted events, and there's a lot of deep, rich storyline in there and really cool stuff going on with the lore. And if you just stop and smell the roses and play the game at a decent pace, there's a lot to enjoy. But if you're playing at the kind of pace that's necessary to get to 80 in the kind of time that some of these first players did, you're not getting the full experience. And I just don't think it's something to be applauded at all.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think, you know, Blizzard, you know, from on top of their pile of money, are probably, you know, disappointed to see these people not enjoy it. But I mean, it is there.
You know what's kind of like? It's kind of like watching a movie on fast forward. Say, I watched that movie much quicker than you. Like, I'm already done, and you're like, yeah, okay, well, what was it about? And you wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah, I mean, they're just crunching numbers for sure.
Yeah. So it's they're treating it like a math problem, which I hate when people do that. I think it.
Well, look, if that's how you get your satisfaction, if that's what pleases you, then I guess you pay your money and you take your choice. You're free to enjoy the game in any way that you want, as long as you don't violate the terms of service or whatever. And these guys aren't doing that. I just think it's a little bit sad.
Right. But I mean, when you think about it, there's probably what 10,000 people that play it like that. I mean.
It's a very small proportion of the player base. Although even on my server now, if you look, you see a lot of 80s wandering around, and they're all generally people who are in the top guilds. You know, there is a race. You know, I remember when we were going from 60 to 70 in my old guild, we actually had the first player to hit 70 in our guild, and we were kind of cheering him on. And you know, he was kind of drinking lots of kind of Mountain Dew and desperately trying to stay awake, and his little text chats were becoming less and less coherent by the end of it all. But it was he was very pleased when he was the first person to hit 70. I guess so, but it's very limited bragging rights. I mean, try that at a cocktail party and see.
It's the same thing,
circle of friends.
Yeah, it's like look how many beers I drank this fast. You know, I did more than you. I've destroyed my liver, but damn it, I drank more beer than you. it's amazing what some guys will do for bragging rights.
I have to say, just on a general note, I am enjoying Lich King very, very much. I do, however, think that Penny Arcade comic from last week, I don't know how many of you saw it, was very, very well observed, where the guy goes, the Night Elf characters kind of go into Northrend. Yeah. He's like, oh, Northrend, a whole new world of adventure. What limitless possibilities await me? And the guy's like, kill six snow moose. It does kind of make you realize that, yeah, even though this is an exciting new world and new zones and stuff, I'm basically doing the same literally the same stuff that I did at level one. Go over here, kill a half dozen of these things, get their skulls, bring them back to this guy, and he'll give you some cash. It's the same. It's incredibly repetitious, and yet something about it doesn't seem so. We keep coming back for more.
It's same different zone.
Yeah, I guess. Like I said, they have done a very good job of building in a lot of event-based quests. Like, I mean, there's a lot of really cool stories and fun things. If you bother to read the quests and get into some of the events, there is a lot. There are a lot of special events. Like the first three or four levels when you play a Death Knight is, it ends with a big, scripted, exciting battle, and it's really interesting. And you really get sucked into the kind of the mythology of the Death Knights and the Lich King and all this great stuff. But, the majority of quests are kill a bunch of these things, find a bunch of that thing, go over here, and you're done. And it's so amazing to me. There's something about the psychology of these online games where people are just perfectly happy to do this kind of, wash, lather, repeat gameplay, and it doesn't seem boring. The left-hand side of my brain is completely aware of the fact that I'm just doing the same stuff over and over and over and over, but the other side of my brain won't let me accept it as boring. It's very strange.
And it won't let you stop.
Yeah, it won't let me stop either. That's the other problem.
So with 11 million people playing World of Warcraft right now, do you think anybody anywhere upgraded their computer for World of Warcraft for Lich King?
Oh yeah.
Well, you don't really need to, and that's part of the appeal. It's not a very system intensive game.
But does Lich King look a little bit better?
It does a little bit, but it's not pushing the engine any harder. They haven't upgraded the engine. I mean, I think there's better artistry, and I think they're learning to deliver better graphics within the same confines, and there may be some higher end effects that you can get if you do have a high end rig that a lot of people aren't getting. Like I've got a fairly high end rig, and so sometimes I'm able to see something off in the distance that another player who has a more mid range system is not seeing. But they're not really getting any less of an experience. It's funny. I really do think that's a big part of the reason why the game has been, such a breakout success. With obviously to hit 11 million players, you can't just hit hardcore gamers. You've got to get casuals as well. and those people don't have high-end machines. You know, a lot of these games we talk about, oh, you know, Crysis is coming out, we've got to build a new system. You don't have to do that with this game. You can just put it in on your system that's 2 or 3 years old, and it'll work fine.
Right, but the amazing thing though is that even with that being like the high end the most popular PC game right now, there is apparently according to John Piddle Research, which I can't say I'd ever heard of before that I saw this story, but he does a TechWatch market analysis kind of thing. They did a story about how PC gaming should get more respect because the PC market is worth approximately $20 billion this year in terms of gaming PC hardware alone. Now, and they expect it to grow to over $34 billion by 2012. So, that's like a ridiculous amount of money. And apparently nobody is buying this for Lich King, but that means they're buying it for everything else.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the vast majority of games on PC do require that, you know, you do constantly keep an eye on, you know, where your system is on the tech curve. You know, Warcraft is a rare exception as a game that doesn't require you to keep upgrading your system. And maybe some other developers would do well to take from that if they want to see their games break out and be big hits. Mate, you know, I said this before, it's not necessarily the smartest thing to do to aim your game at the elite 1% who have these liquid cooled Alienware rigs, because you are necessarily limiting your market to a very small demographic.
Right. And like a lot of developers are taking that to heart. I mean, and like you look at the Old Republic, Star Wars: The Old Republic, that BioWare is working on. They're not trying to push any graphical envelopes with that game. If you've seen the screenshots, I mean, it looks okay, but it's not.
Yeah, because they're smart. They've seen what Warcraft has done. They understand that a big chunk of the reason that Warcraft has been so successful, aside from the fact that, you know, it's such a good game, is that you don't need a high end system to play it, and you know, they're going to be smart, and they're going to copy that formula.
Right, but according to getting back to this article here, it says if you add up the shipments of the recent big recent generation consoles, including PS3, Wii, Xbox 360s, this is not including DS, PSP, and PS2, you get close to 74.7 million units, which seems like a lot. But then he's comparing, and that's over the past, you know, 3 or 4 years. That's comparing from 2005 to 2006 or 2008. Sorry, 2005 to 2008. He says 196 million gaming PCs shipped, and 10 million of them were in the mainstream enthusiast class, and he says if we include mainstream desktop and high-end notebooks, we could add another 187 million units.
What's their criteria for what a gaming PC is? When someone buys a PC, how do they? I mean, obviously, if you buy one from, like, you know, Alienware or, you know, Voodoo or whatever, and we get one of those Blackbirds, it's pretty obvious they're buying that for gaming. But when you get more to kind of the high mid range, where it's a decent machine, but, you know, can obviously do lots of other things, how do they know that these are being sold to gamers as gaming machines?
It does not actually say. But I imagine that they've got some kind of basic criteria. It's probably not very strict. I would guess, like, you know, non-integrated graphics would be my guess.
Right.
Which, you know, is not saying very much in terms of the gaming capability. But you know, it's something. It's a game capable PC. I mean, you can play a lot of games on a PC with an integrated graphics card. So.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the new MacBooks would qualify under that criteria.
Right.
And,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Fair enough, because they apparently are quite good.
Yeah, I saw some benchmarks that showed them as you know, fairly substantial gaming machines, actually.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, that's another thing to throw in the face of people that say PC gaming is dying is $20 billion.
I found it interesting in this study also that apparently, according to a graph they have on the article website, the revenue between the regions of Europe and U.S. and Asia are roughly equal of gaming hardware, apparently.
Oh, that's cool. I was thinking yesterday, I had this thought where I was contemplating, like, my next hardware upgrade, you know. But then it hit me, like, the games that are coming out aren't really pushing past the Crytek engine, and that seems to be like the top of the line as far as graphics go from gaming. And I'm wondering if it's because of the Xbox. You know, people are doing their co-development and on all these AAA games that are awesome games, like Left 4 Dead and Fallout 3 are amazing games. And I don't mind so much that they're not like pushing the envelope. But I'm like, well, maybe I don't have to upgrade for a little bit longer, you know, because there's nothing that's like pushing it, and it runs fine on my like year old, not too expensive hardware.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually a good thing, as in terms of a lot of people, you know, like to complain that the PC gaming is too expensive because you have to upgrade all the time to play all the high end games. But this year, not really.
Not so much right now. Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on how many people are iterating their engines and if they're synced up. If 1 year id updated their engine, then the next there was a new Source engine, and then the next there's a new the Crytek engine, or what, you know, if they're doing it like every year there's a new engine and a new game based on that, then that'll keep pushing it forward. But I guess Unreal is the obvious one, but there has been, I think, a little fewer iterations with those because they take longer to develop now, I think.
Yeah.
So it slows down your upgrade cycle a little bit.
So,
and also, like you said, people are developing for cross-platform. So they're aiming for graphical capabilities of 3- and 4-year-old console systems.
What do you guys think, being like in the preview scene, is going to be the next game that really pushes things? Or is there one yet that you've seen?
That's a good question. I can't think of anything that really...
Rage?
I
don't know.
I mean, even that's going to be designed to run on consoles.
Oh, yeah. True.
But, I don't know. In terms of maybe not graphical polish, but just there's some aspects of GTA 4 on the PC that are pretty compelling in terms of the number of objects and vehicle physics and collision, and the draw distance on PC is significantly better than console.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. That's maybe one. I don't know. I haven't really seen anything per se that's blown me away in the way that Crysis might have.
Yeah, we haven't seen yet the next like big jump up like that, but it's coming. I mean, they just haven't shown enough yet.
I mean, I guess one might be in terms of the MMO, when we're talking about what's accessible. We previewed a game called Otherland in our December issue, I want to say. And that's set to release in 2010, but it's a very high quality graphically MMO. Looks pretty interesting, so we're going to keep our eye on that for sure.
So speaking of like hardware upgrades, Mirror's Edge on the PC is apparently going to be using PhysX heavily. Did anyone see the video that they put out?
No.
It's got it uses a lot of the fabric stuff where. I don't know if you guys have seen like NVIDIA tech demos of this, but it's like really realistic moving fabric. Like there's one point where you kick a soldier through a plastic sheet, and it moves very realistically. There's a helicopter that flies by and shoots at you, and it tears through a sign, like a canvas sign, and it all looks very good. It's not gonna affect gameplay at all, I don't think. But you know, it's another example of where PCs are going to look a little bit better than consoles, even on the same games. Because
I don't think it can have any substantive effects on gameplay because it's coming out shortly after the console versions, and they're all basically the same game. So I don't think they were going to go in and retool the design around some of these effects. But yeah, it's nice to have.
Right.
I just would really like to see. I don't know if in this new engine there's going to be some kind of feature set that helps prevent me from wanting to put my foot through the screen every 5 minutes. Because I've got to tell you, I have a lot of mixed feelings about Mirror's Edge. I've been playing it a lot on the Xbox. And when it works, it really, really works. That whole free-running thing, you know, when you're kind of leaping over things and grabbing pipes and running across walls and sliding under things and jumping and leaping, and you string together those moves, like you feel like you're in a high-tech Jason Bourne movie or something. It's really, really exhilarating, and you've got people mm-hmm. chasing you and bullets kind of ricocheting off things as you duck under doors and stuff. Really exciting. But then there's a lot of really, really, really fiddly puzzles where if you don't get it exactly right, you will die every time, and there have been many, many times and I've just wanted to throw the controller down. So it's one of those games where you can't hate it. You can't love it. It's a real kind of love-hate relationship, and I've found it very confusing emotionally playing that game.
Well, we'll be getting a hold of it for the PC in the next couple of weeks, so we will let you know how it stacks up. Another couple quick things is that Google's Lively, which is kind of a Second Life setup, apparently has not proven that lively, and they're shutting it down at the end of the year. So there can be only one Second Life. Apparently, there can be no Third Life. The other thing is the long-awaited Sins of a Solar Empire 1.1 patch has finally come out. This thing has been in beta for about 6 months, but it does make some major changes. If anybody out there was frustrated by the multiplayer setup they had in there because it required you to open some ports to get it to work right sometimes, and there were problems with, you know, people dropping out and not switching the host over correctly, they completely revamped the multiplayer setup, and they redid a few of the graphics models and textures and a few things like that, and rebalanced a bunch of things. So it'll essentially play like a different game in multiplayer now. So I recommend checking that out. The bad news is that they pushed back the Entrenchment expansion until after the holidays. It was a mini expansion, a $10 mini expansion, but actually kind of loaded with content. So I was looking forward to that. But if you pre-order it, you can still get into the beta, which I have to imagine, since they were going to release it around now, but then decided not to because they wanted to miss, you know, Lich King and everything. I have to imagine that what you would be playing when you're playing the beta would be essentially what they're going to release. So you're not really missing anything if you just pre-order. So with that, let's take a couple questions.
Hey guys, Renus here. Hey, just wanted to say thank goodness we have Steam and Valve for PC gaming. Love the podcast, love the magazine, but quick question for you. With Steam Cloud, it's a great feature that we're going to be able to pick up our saved games on another computer just by logging into Steam. Will this work with non-Steam games? For example, if I have Stalker, the retail version, but I have it in Steam technically, you know how you can basically launch the Steam, the Stalker retail game from Steam? Will that transfer my save games over and my key configs and whatever else? I'd be surprised. I mean, it's too good to be true, but that would be awesome. Anyways, that's my question. Hey, keep up the good work. Love you guys. Thanks.
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but I would also be very, very surprised if it does that, because it doesn't even, like, Steam doesn't even, like, really recognize those things as games, because you can put literally anything in there. You can put Firefox in there. It just uses it as a launcher so that all your games are in one place. I think it requires a little bit more integration than that.
It could be something they roll out in the future. The Steam infrastructure, it's very modular, where they basically have separate servers for achievements and friends lists and individual games and, you know, storing different data. So conceivably, I mean, I guess all a developer would have to do is, you know, talk to Valve and get them to, you know, put some server space for, you know, that's dedicated to, say, Stalker and those configuration files and save games and whatnot. Yeah, I mean, that'd be a really handy thing to have, I'm sure.
I think that's probably more trouble than they're going to go to for people that aren't paying to use their services. I mean, like, sure. It seems like a benefit they're offering to people that have bought games from them, which makes more sense to me. It's like, why would they let you go and buy games from you know, off the shelf, and they get nothing from that, and then you go and sign into your account and upload your saves. I don't think they're going to do that. They could surprise me, but I don't think so.
Hi, PC Gamer. My name is Chad from Hermitage, PA. My question to you is about pirating. I know you guys take a really strong stand on pirating games, but I was wondering how you feel about pirating games that you already currently own that just don't seem to be working. Obviously, the store will not take them back when they're open. So what is your stand on that? And also, what about pirating games from companies that don't exist no more? How do you feel about that one? All right. Love the podcast. Hopefully, I'll hear this question. And keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
I guess the part about the companies that don't exist anymore, some of those games are considered abandonware, where You know, they're just not supported, not sold anymore. Those you can generally find online, and that's a very gray area of piracy. That it's like, if you can't buy it, nobody's selling it, then yeah, I mean, there's really no ethical problem with that. But as for pirating games that you already own, I think he's talking about like getting no CD cracks.
That's what I guess.
Yeah. Or maybe something along the lines of what happened with Red Alert 3, like the CD key's not working. So.
Oh right. Yeah, I mean, like workarounds. If you own the game, you can do pretty much whatever you want to it. I mean, that's not pirating it because you've already bought it. But yeah, I'm kind of unclear on exactly what he's asking. But yeah, if a game isn't working, like, because of maybe anti-piracy measures, maybe that's what he's talking about. Like Secure ROM won't play on your system because you've got emulation software on there, downloading a crack to get around that. Yeah, I mean, that's not, as long as you've paid for it, that's really all we care about. Just make sure that the developers are rewarded for their work.
Yeah, and thank goodness we have good old games to, you know, over time revive some of these franchises that are out of print. And there's also, in the case of Abandonware, there's a lot of communities out there that, you know, try to keep games. I know one that I visited a while ago was Met Commander. I'm really fond of that. You know, the company's gone, but, you know, Foster Interactive is out the door, but they try to keep it going. But
Microsoft owns that.
They don't own the license to Mech Warrior, Mech Commander anymore, though, unfortunately.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, but generally, you can just search Google for Abandonware, and you can find a few sites that have like a bunch of really old games that are just pretty much dead. So you can find them that way. But also, good old games is an excellent place to find games that you otherwise can't find.
Hey, this is Mike in Nebraska. Hey, I love to replay my old games, and that's why I have a bone to pick with you guys, specifically DRM. Although I appreciate your little lock you show in the magazine, the actual score of a game doesn't seem to be any lower as a result. Just look at Far Cry 2 and Spore, for example. Really, you guys need to review the whole product, not just the gameplay. DRM's a major part of any product, and really, can you tell me that DRM servers will be up and running 10 years from now? And the fact is that no guarantee that I'll be able to play my DRM games 10 years from now. And on a similar point, I'm tired of people talking about how great Steam is. I just laugh when I hear people talking about how they avoided DRM by getting a game on Steam. Steam is DRM. If you don't believe me, just try to resell a game you bought on Steam. If you can't resell it, you don't really own it. And what if Valve shuts down in 5 years? By listening to you guys, you think it was the best thing ever, but you can't love Steam and still say you hate DRM. That's it.
It's a fair point. And I think that the argument that we should lower scores on account of DRM is and we've talked about it, and we disagree with that, because we're evaluating the gameplay. We're not even really evaluating a product. We're evaluating what the game is like to play. It's like if you're watching a movie. Do you want to evaluate the quality of the filmmaking, the artistic value of it, or do you want to evaluate the quality of the
theater service, you know, yeah, like, the parking lot, you know, right. Anything.
Yeah, like that's an excellent analogy. Do you evaluate the parking lot at the movie theater? If the movie theater parking lot is crowded, is the movie not as good?
That's actually my analogy, by the way, from a few weeks ago.
It was.
All right.
I will be submitting an invoice for the use of that. the guy is right, by the way, about, you know, yeah.
If
you think Steam
right.
is DRM, you're mistaken. But
well, no, Steam is
his general attitude, where he says like, well, if you think you own it. You're mistaken, is kind of symptomatic, I think, of a slightly libertarian view from game consumers these days, which I think is going to have to go the way of the dodo in the next couple of years. You know, you've got to get used to the idea that you don't really buy games anymore; you just license them.
You own the rights to them. When I was
installing Lich King the other day, you look at the user agreement, and the first thing it says, right, the first sentence is, you're not purchasing this game, you're licensing it from us. So they reserve the right to you know, take it away from you at any point. And as games become, you know, in the olden days when you bought a game and you went home and you put it in a box and played it, obviously, yeah you owned that game. But the you know, as much as it's great that PCs and consoles now are connected online and you can download new content and connect up and play with other people multiplayer, all that is great. But the other end of it is that you know, companies now have a lot more control over how much you really own the game. You know, they're going to reserve the right to yank content or take down multiplayer servers. You know, like buy an EA Sports game, it'll say right there on the back, you know, we only guarantee that the online features of this game will be available for, I think it's like 90 days, and if we want to take it down, we can. You know, it's more and more server-side, more and more controlled by the companies. And a lot of people find that unpalatable, but you're going to have to kind of get on board with it because it's not going to change.
Also, Steam is DRM. I mean, the fact that they make you log in to activate your game, and you know, there are restrictions on your game. It is a form of DRM. We just find it to be one of the least obtrusive forms of DRM we've seen. Concerning that you can set it to play in offline mode, so you don't have to be logged in to play all your games. We find it to be one of the best user experiences you can get right now. So I mean that's why we like it so much. It's true that Valve could burn to the ground, but like we say, you know, at that point you'll have bigger things to worry about, like the zombie apocalypse. So it's very unlikely that anything like that is going to happen. It is possible, yes, but we kind of doubt it, especially since Valve's got to be making money hand over fist. they're probably not going to go out of business tomorrow.
Yeah, and I don't know about the rest of you guys, but it's like, I have no problem with DRM that's like, doesn't stop me from enjoying the game. Like, World of Warcraft, you could say, has DRM, because, I mean, you have to log into your account. There's really no way to pirate it. But, I mean, it doesn't stop me from a paying customer from playing. It's DRM where, like, the Red Alert 2 thing, where you paid for it, and it just punishes you.
Three.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a little glimpse into what might be the future for PC gamers, you've only got to look at what's happening right now on the consoles. I mean, Xbox 360, you know, it's not just an individual game, but the entire platform, your entire hardware system is tied to an account which is monitored at, you know, Microsoft headquarters. And if you do something with your Xbox, like modify it to play pirated games or whatever, they know what the unique signature of your console is, and they can just shut it off. This happens, you know, every 6 months or every year or so. Microsoft identify a bunch of people who have illegally modded their consoles, and you know, one morning you'll go downstairs and turn on your modded console, and you just can't do anything with it because they've shut it down. And I don't know if this is something that will ever come into the PC world, but that's the level of control that Microsoft can enjoy with a closed architecture. So I don't know if they'll ever be able to expand that to the PC side, but something to think about.
All right, and as for the activation, like things like Red Alert and like Spore, and you know, the EA is using like the set number of activations. I mean, it is a legitimate concern. At the same time, realistically, it's not likely to be an issue. Just the fact, like we know a bunch of developers, and these guys all take a lot of pride in their work. If their company were to go under, and they would. And like the activation server had to stop, these guys would almost certainly, if they possibly could, they would put out a patch that would remove that and allow you to play it without that. And because they want you to be able to play their games. They're not, you know, they don't wash their hands of these things when they ship them. They're proud of them. So
this is why I think on the MMO side, I'm always a little bit gun shy about getting involved in games. Just to go back to the MMO discussion as an example of this. It's not even a licensing issue, but just a commercial issue. You know, let's say I decide to play Conan, you know, online, or Lord of the Rings online, or any new MMO that comes out, and I'm going to get invested, as you do with an MMO, in that character and in that game. I'll have a level 50 character, and I love playing it every night, and my friends are there. And then one day you log on, and the company went bankrupt, and you can't play the game anymore because the game only exists as long as the company is there to run the servers. One of the things I like about Warcraft is, you know, we know it's not going anywhere. But when you've got some of these, you know, these other MMO games that are a little bit more on the bubble, you don't know month to month if the company is going to be able to keep going. I would be gun shy about committing to that.
Yeah, I mean, people that bought lifetime subscriptions to Hellgate London got burned. So, Although, you know, at the same time, they're still able to play those games in single player mode. But
maybe there was some small print that suggested that it was for the lifetime of the company, not your lifetime.
Right, right. I'm sure that, that was in there somewhere. They're probably at least that smart.
Are there really any other examples of that happening, though, of a company dissolving and a game not being...
I can't think of a single one.
Me neither.
Yaz, can you think of anything?
The racing
Prey. I can't remember. I think it was... God, what was the name of that Microsoft? Asheron's Call. Asheron's Call 2. I remember. I think there have been other ones since then, but I remember there was a story. I think it was on Slate magazine. This is a few years ago when they shut down Asheron's Call, and it was all about how, you know, one day it was really pointedly written about, you know, one day a guy is going to walk into an office at Microsoft and flip a switch, and an entire world, an entire universe is just going to blink out of existence, and you know, all the people that were invested and had social networks and, you know, lived in that world to some extent in their free time. You know, that's a lot to take away from somebody. Can you imagine if World of Warcraft, I mean, obviously it wouldn't. Can you imagine if they just flipped the switch and World of Warcraft disappeared tomorrow? There'd be riots in the streets.
That would be an awesome movie.
That's the next screenplay, guys.
It might be like Left 4 Dead. We'd all just be standing out there dazed, and then the non-WoW players...
I actually don't know if there would be riots in the streets, because that would, to get to the streets, you have to leave your house.
Right.
And I think the majority of the player base probably, at this point, doesn't know how to find their front door.
There would be riots on the internet.
Yeah.
But who said Prey earlier?
Oh, I was thinking about Prey and how when they were having the service that downloaded the game and then it shut down, but they just sent out copies of the game to everyone.
Right, that was a service called Triton, I was gonna point out that hey, they shut it down, but they made sure that everybody who bought it there could play it, because, you know, generally they're not out to screw you. So with that, we should probably go to playlists. Gaz, we know what you've been playing. Why don't you?
Yeah, Lich King. I am gonna get into Left 4 Dead. I am gonna find time for it. But you know what these MMOs are like. They really are a very demanding mistress, and so it's gonna continue to be. You know, if you want now, I can do my playlist for the next, you know, 2 or 3 months and not have to come back. You know, you can just record me saying Lich King a lot now and just kind of, you know, edit that in. I don't even need to be here.
Well, we're gonna expect you to have some new insight to it every time we have you on.
Okay.
So that's your homework.
Lich King. Well, I can actually expand it a little bit. Lich King mostly. Left 4 Dead is definitely gonna be on my playlist. I just haven't got to it yet. I have been playing a lot of Mirror's Edge, which I talked about earlier. So a little bit of that too. Yeah, that's it for now. Lich King. Did I say Lich King? Yeah, Lich King.
It may have come up. Josh, How about you, Josh?
I've been doing about the same in Lich King as Gary. I've got my Death Knight up to 58, got a Rogue up to 72. Unfortunately,
yeah,
you're
about where I am.
Yeah.
Did you finish the Death Knight quest chain?
Yes. So
because it's
epic.
It's funny, you know, when I didn't really know what a Death Knight was, and in playing it, I was like, wow, you're like a Sith Lord. You're like a really bad guy. How am I gonna, you know, past level 60, go out and be a member of the Alliance and be someone that isn't universally hated by everyone? Because I'm kind of on the bad guy side here.
Yeah,
they resolve that through the storyline in quite a satisfying way, I thought. My favorite part is when you have to go back to Stormwind.
Yeah, and
no, don't give it away, but it's all part of the fun.
You can bleep that out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I left my authenticator at the office all week, so I haven't been able to play Lich King at night. So I've been playing Left 4 Dead with Evan and some of the other guys from the office, which is amazing.
You have the hardware authenticator?
Yeah.
Oh. I saw them giving those away at BlizzCon. What is the point of that? It's a little dongle, but I didn't understand what it did.
Basically, when you press the button, it generates a number, and when you log into the account, you have to type in the number that it generates at that time. I have no idea how it knows what number my authenticator is generating. But yeah, it's basically so no one else can log into your account, even if your like information gets hacked.
So your girlfriend can't jump on and delete your character.
But if you lose the dongle or it breaks or malfunctions.
You can call and get the authenticator like unlinked to your account, but you have to like know all the your social security number or whatever.
Is this something that's hard coded into World of Warcraft, or is it like an extra program that runs or something?
No, it's hard coded. Right after you type the password and hit login, a little extra box pops up inside the game.
Oh, so this is something that they've done in collaboration with Blizzard then?
Yeah, Blizzard did it.
Oh, okay. Because I thought it was like a third-party company that was giving away these dongles.
No, they've actually been selling them on the store for maybe like 6 months or so. Okay. On the
Blizzard store. I mean, it seems like a good solution because a lot of people's accounts do get hacked.
Right. Yeah.
I can only hope the next iteration of the dongle is like the old like putting keys into a lock and then like pulling a switch and then like reciting like a passcode and all those like nuclear war movies. Like
I tell you what's scary now is you remember that thing where Sarah Palin's email account got hacked.
All right.
And then it turned out that it wasn't really being hacked. Someone had just been quite inventive in like doing their research and then going to her.
Yeah, they just knew where she went to high school and where she met her husband.
Yeah, all you need to know is like, you know, find out like what the name of her first dog or whatever, the answer to the security question is, and you can recover the password. And it occurred to me the other day, wow, that's not a difficult thing to do. There probably is a lot of hacking that happens like that. It kind of freaked me out a little bit.
Yeah, right, and a lot of the questions are just, what's your mother's maiden's name? Like, that's easy to find.
Yeah, it's like, that's really easy to find out.
Yeah.
Especially if you know the person.
Yeah. Like, one of my security questions for some account, I can't remember what it is like, what's the name of the city where you grew up? And that would be the easiest thing in the world for anybody to find out.
England.
So I like the ones that let you set your own security question. Rather than having to pick from like a list of five ones where like the answers would all be immediately obvious to anyone who's willing to like, you know, go through your garbage or, you know, spend 5 minutes on the internet.
Right. The security question should be, what's your deepest, darkest secret? So Evan,
you know what would be great is if you set up a site like that, but all you were doing was collecting them all and then you publish them.
Exactly.
There is a really good website. I can't remember what it is, but it's like, you know, for anonymous confessions. And it's a box. You just type in, it's like, you know, sometimes I like to eat my own boogers or something as obvious as that. But then it's like, you know, I jerked off to a picture of my dog, some, you know, or like really awful things. And you can type them in without any fear. Some of them are fun to read.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
By the way, of those two, only the one about the boogers is true of me. I haven't.
Of course. Of course.
But I was like six.
All right, my playlist. I've been getting back into Grid in addition to playing Left 4 Dead. I'm crazy about Grid. I can't say enough about it. It's probably the best racing game I've played ever, honestly. Grid, it's by Codemasters. And I guess I'm equally excited to hear that Dirt 2, which is sort of the sister game to Grid, is coming out next year on PC and consoles. But I guess I put in like probably about 15 hours into Left 4 Dead since it came out on Monday. And I think the thing I'm enjoying most is being a hunter. This is something I'm sort of talking about in my Backspace column next month. Just being a hunter and in open areas, just jumping over people. It's something Dan recommended to me a while ago, but just jumping around, having them look at you, just knowing that you're scaring people. Like, I just kind of live for those intangible things, knowing that I'm affecting people in ways that aren't their HP, you know, their damage. And it's just extremely satisfying knowing that I'm just being able to contribute to the game that way, and it's a lot of fun.
Right. And to be precise, according to his Steam profile, Evan has put in 14.4 hours to Left 4 Dead, plus 9.7 for the demo alone.
Thank you.
That's significant.
Thank you very much.
Who haven't we covered? Andy. No, did we cover Andy?
No, I've just been playing Fallout 3, though, whenever I get a chance, and it's just
tell us
of
your
exploits. So far, I've been just running around the mall, the National Mall, getting into the archives, stealing the Declaration of Independence. I thought that was a really good quest. And
did you feel like Nicolas Cage?
I was like, this is exactly like National Treasure. But I thought that was brilliant at the end part where I don't want to like give too much away, but
don't ruin the whole thing.
Yeah, so it's like one of those things where it comes at you with this unexpected twist at the end, and you're just like, yes, this is why this game is awesome.
Ghost of Lincoln chases you.
And then I have a wig now. I'm wearing the wig of...
I love that.
And it's given me like all these perks, and I always forget I'm wearing it, and then I'll like blow someone's head off with my shotgun, and it'll like reveal me behind them with just this like old-timey wig on, and I'm like, yeah.
I got to tell you, I was in a GameStop the other day, and I found this kind of simultaneously awesome and intimidating. I picked up the Fallout 3 official, you know, player's guidebook. And this thing is like a telephone directory. Mm. I mean, I'm kind of amazed at what a huge, amazingly deep game they are able to make. But it also, I almost find it a little bit off-putting. Like, am I ever going to be able to play all my way through this game? It just seems almost too big.
Oh, you'll get through it easily, but you won't see everything at least not on your first or even second time through. It's built to be replayed a bunch. But that's one thing I wanted to raise is one of the problems that a lot of people have with Fallout 3 that is something that's different from the way the role playing worked in the first one was that there is clothing like that wig that gives you perks to your special skills or your special
it's giving me like plus stats.
It gives you plus one to charisma and plus one to intelligence, right? That wig?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that's like a big bonus.
It's huge, and that's why I just leave it on, because it's great. Right.
And there are other pieces of clothing that give you plus, you know, bonuses to your skills, you know, your weapon skills or lockpicking or whatever, or sneak. The argument is that diminishes the impact of the choices you make in your character. Because if you're getting a bunch of bonuses, and there are a lot of things that give you bonuses, if you're getting all these bonuses from just what you're wearing, the role playing is a little bit diminished.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that also I've been using like big weapons, which I shouldn't be able to use. Like my strength isn't high enough to be able to use them, as per traditional Fallout.
Yeah,
and
I don't think they have a strength requirement to use weapons in this. They just have it reduce the amount of damage you do.
But it still seems like I'm totally doing fine with them every once in a while, and I don't use them a lot. But I shouldn't be able to use them at all. So right. That's just my thought. But it's I don't know, it's not that big of a deal.
Right. So what is the most recent perk that you chose?
It was probably something boring.
I just got Mysterious Stranger, which is a lot of fun when he shows up.
Yeah, he's cool. I got him the first time. I made myself not pick him the second time because it does wear, I wouldn't say it gets old after a while, but I wanted to pick as many different perks as I could the second time.
Mm-hmm. I think I did the extra. You get an extra special stat, and I put it into luck. So
right, yeah, but one of the things that Deathlock, our RPG expert, he didn't really like that perk very much because you can do it. He said he did it like every time.
Yeah, you can max your character out.
Yeah, and that takes away some of the role playing, the importance of the role playing decisions.
Yeah, a little bit.
But in order to do that, you've sacrificed the ability to choose other perks, which would have taken your character in a different direction. So it's debatable, but I definitely see his point, and I liked the old system a lot. To be fair, I like this system a lot too. But I think I preferred the old system in some ways.
I think I do as well. You're getting a lot more also in this version of the game, so can you complain?
Yeah. Well, you'd be amazed how easily a lot of people can complain.
That's right.
But as for me, I've been playing mostly Left 4 Dead in my free time, and a little bit of World of Goo too. I'm working my way through that. My girlfriend actually finished that in like two sittings.
Wow. It's taking me a long time to play that game, actually.
Yeah, she really got into it, so she finished it long before me. But that's a really great game. I like to describe it as if Tim Burton made a puzzle game. It would look a lot like.
Well, didn't Danny Elfman do the music for it? Or it just sounds exactly like Danny Elfman's score.
I sincerely doubt that Danny Elfman did music for a game like that. But it is definitely Danny Elfman inspired.
Definitely.
But Left 4 Dead, been playing a lot with that, and we've been playing on Advanced, and they've definitely cranked up the difficulty, even I think a little bit since the demo.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah,
they've also They introduced a patch. I think it was a little after release. I don't think anybody noticed, but they nerfed melee so that you can't melee indefinitely. You get tired after a certain amount. Yeah. Because that way, I mean, people can just sit in a corner and melee, and then the people behind them can shoot the zombies. And
yeah, I heard of people going through the whole thing just meleeing.
Yeah. You can still do that. Because you can kill zombies with melee.
Mm-hmm. If you hit them from behind, like their neck, I think actually it's one hit usually.
And I think like 4 or 5 hits for will take out a hunter. And if you keep hitting a boomer, don't do that because it'll explode. So you know, you can get through it. And Evan, remember when we went through that whole stage of dead air with just hitting people with med packs?
That was a delight. All those pilots and TSA security people.
And then the tank showed up and we had to run like hell. But I think there may be something wonky with the way it's choosing who to assign a tank as a tank, because in one game I was tank like 5 times in a row. So I think they need to tweak a little bit the way it's selecting who's a tank.
Yeah, there is some balancing stuff they're working out. The big change I noticed from when we played it on LAN was there's this spawn mode thing where if you know it's 4-on-4 versus, and basically 3 people on the infected side will spawn, but the 4th person will sort of hang in the queue, so to speak.
I got that once too. I think it was because there was a witch around.
Yeah, it's definitely balance related, and it'll basically spawn that last person in when somebody dies or something.
Well, I think when it happened to me, I spawned right after the witch that was around the survivor that was killed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Last night it happened for me constantly for the entire campaign. Yeah, it was at least like a minute wait. It was pretty frustrating actually. Like it even happened like when they first started. Like I was stuck watching the survivors leave the safe room until one of the zombies got killed.
Right. Yeah. There are always a few little bugs, and we ran into something like where we couldn't open the safe room door to get out in one part. I was playing with Will and Norm. We couldn't open the door. We had to load a new map. But anyway, we have to wrap it up for this week. So you should go to gamesradar.com/PC and click on the subscribe link on the left side. If you want to call us and leave us a question, you can either email us a question at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com in MP3 form, or you can call at, I will never remember this number. Andy, what's the number?
It's toll-free 877-404-1337, extension 724.
All right. And so for myself, for Evan Lottie, Gary Witta, Josh Augustine, and Andy Bauman, we'll see all of you guys next week.
I know you guys take a really strong stand on pirating games.
Every Tuesday at 8.
But I was wondering how you feel about pirating. The news
will be revealed. What the f***?
Made certain people nervous.
Manipulation. What is that?
No.
Something in my browser started freaking out.
That was hilarious.
I know. Thank I thought that was his question or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
start over. I would rate the call quality good.
I love that.
I'm not going to go very good.